If you were to follow the imaginary line known as the Arctic Circle all the way round the world, you'd eventually land on a small island called Neversink, whose shores are lapped by the icy waters of the Great Northern Sea. Not that you'd want to. Rugged and wintry, Neversink was forged by a fire from an undersea volcano. The ground is like teeth, and the wind lashes like a whip. The interior is a bleak landscape of glacial ice caps, ancient black basalt, and frozen soil called tundra. Wild grasslands and soggy bogs cover the warmer southern regions, but there are few trees because of the lack of rain. In summer, the sun scarcely sets. In winter, it scarcely rises. And volcanoes disguised as snow-capped mountains erupt without warning, carving the scarred surface anew with flowing lava. But the jagged southern coastline, where sheer cliffs and moss-covered rocks rise above the bays and fjords, was once the perfect home for a group of seabirds known as auks. Short, stubby, black and white birds, all with funny-sounding names to match their funny-looking appearance. Razorbill, Myrrh, Guillemot, Puffin. Neversink was home to the largest population of these strange birds in that part of the world, the colony of Auk's Landing. These are birds who happily spend much of their time at sea, eat fish, fly underwater, and are not to be confused with penguins. On Neversink, auks could nest safely in the nooks and crannies of the island's ice-gouged rocks, far away from the perching birds of nearby Titonia, protected from predators by a girdle of ocean, safe from most threats other than old age and an unpredictable sea goddess named Sedna. So had it been since the age of settlement, and so would it have remained, many believe, if Rosbell had never tasted Lucy Puffin's fish smidgens. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. For now, you should know that the world of this story is one that existed long ago and is no more. The continents had formed and separated, but were covered with forests. The dinosaurs were long gone. Humans did not yet roam the earth, much less rule it. In short, it was a bird's paradise. And as you may have guessed from the cover of the book, one bird in particular, once upon a time, behaved heroically enough, or foolishly enough, depending on who you ask, for someone to write about him. Of course, you might not be reading the story at all if walruses couldn't talk. I know what you're thinking. All animals can talk. Some can even sing, dance, and play golf. But it was walruses, after all, who came up with a notion of converting talking into writing, so that future generations of animals could enjoy all the many wonderful things walruses have to say. One walrus in particular was, I believe, the author of A Short History of Neversink, which is the source of the story I'm about to tell you. How can I be so sure? I think once you read on, you will understand completely, or not. By the end, you may not remember you read this. And why not just read A Short History of Neversink? Let me assure the reader that while walruses are great scholars of the First Order, they operate on a scale alien to mere humans. To a walrus, for example, to weigh less than 4,000 pounds makes you slim. And a meal of fewer than 3,000 clams is a light snack. Along those lines, there is nothing short about A Short History of Neversink. A Short History of Neversink is actually a multi-volume set that is part of the multi-multi-volume set, A Long History of the Whole World, which would take the average human more than 150 years to read. Despite the important research and fantastic stories contained within, the author, like all walrus authors, is given to numerous and lengthy digressions about whatever may tickle his whiskers. Chiefly, the importance of food, the acquisition of food, the preparation of food, and the eating of food. There are also many passages devoted to the excellence of the walrus mind and the importance of the walrus opinion. Trust me when I tell you that most of this is of little interest to the non-walrus. So consider the story in your hand a translation of sorts. I've even changed the names of some things and places to their contemporary names to help you, dear reader, better understand this strange world.